I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short. Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today you'll hear the first part of an interview between author Rebecca Roth, who wrote the book Methodical Illusion, and Red Ice radio show host Henrik Palmgren from Sweden. The website is rediceradio.net. Rebecca Roth is a retired flight attendant, international purser, a volunteer firefighter, and has been trained as an emergency medical technician. The interview started with the question, why did she write the book? So let's begin with her response.
Well, this is an interesting story in and of itself. You know, when I had nearly a 30-year career, and while I was flying, I always had exciting things happen to me. And if there was a sports star or a movie star or somebody, and next thing you know, I'm out to dinner with them. So all my coworkers always encouraged me to write a book while I was flying. Well, I retired in 2004 or thereabouts. And around 2008 or 9, somewhere in there, you know, when you're retired, you don't pay that much attention. And it just kind of caught me off guard what happened. I started to write a book, and it was going to be really just a novel about flight attendants and that lifestyle and different, you know, things that happened. So all the people that I knew and met and experiences I had over those long, exciting years that I put in. And I wanted to introduce a character that was of a Middle Eastern name, a gentleman, for a date for a character that I had. And so I just Google searched, and lo and behold, what happened to me? I Google searched the 19 Arab hijackers from 9/11. And what popped up in front of me was a BBC article claiming that several of the hijackers were still alive. And this was dated September 23rd, 2001. Now, just so you know, after 9/11, I was home watching it on television unfold. During that time I was flying, I absolutely could not look into what the heck had happened and why we didn't have jets scrambled within 6 minutes. So I was in what we call cognitive dissonance. I was afraid to look any deeper. And when I found those guys were still alive and that the Saudi government was actually suing the United States Federal Bureau of Investigation over the use of not just these people's names, but their photos and their home addresses in Saudi Arabia. Well, you know, then now it's a drone strike. They do that to you. But yeah. I mean, I was like, what? I read through that article twice and it was a hammer over my head. I had never really looked in depth, but I knew something was wrong from day one. And when I was in the airline, the thing I found strange about the whole entire 9/11 event was that no one ever spoke to us about it. No one talked about how they got in the cockpit, what happened, all the details of those four planes. And that was something we always did, is review incidents like that in our yearly training. And so I got into a full-blown research. I went into this for a couple years, probably 20 hours a day. I was pretty crazed. Luckily, my husband came along on the trip with me.
Well, that's good. Yeah, could be shattering relationships otherwise, right?
It is unbelievable how many people have contacted me after the book has come out and told me of their stories of how they got onto that, going down the rabbit hole, as we say, and their spouse refused to go and refused to hear it, and that it broke up so many relationships. But fortunately, my husband and I both did the research together, and what I found literally shocked me into, I was physically sick when I made the discovery of what I did and all of the information surrounding the whole 9/11 event. I often refer to myself as that guy in Close Encounters of the Third Kind that built the devil's tower in his house. I mean, I had charts all over my office. I had the National Transportation Safety Board data where they claimed the airplanes were descending 6 to 10,000 feet a minute. And yet we had a flight attendant sitting on the phone with no background sounds. It was everything calm, and her voice was calm, just saying goodbye to her husband and kids. And just all these anomalies popped up. And I mean, I charted them, so they didn't just totally pop up. But I thought, well, gee, that's an interesting thing for her to do. And the fact that the flight attendants and the pilots didn't follow our training, and we're very well trained. That's all we do. That's what we're there for. I know you think it's the pillow blanket and the Coke and 7-Up and the cocktails, but actually we're just trained to help you in the event of any emergency, including a hijacking. So we are the persons that are in control. And if you've ever been involved in any kind of an incident, whether it's decompression or a heart attack or something on board an aircraft, you will see flight attendants immediately go into that trained mode where you are trained to do that. And you don't even stop and think about it, whether you lose your landing gear on landing, the commands that are drilled into us, and the step-by-step protocols for hijacking. And those were the things that I started to see were not followed by the crew. Then I started looking into the details that the passengers said, along with what the FAA and the National Transportation Safety Board were claiming the planes were doing. And I thought, nah, that can't be right. And so I really just dug into this. After I gathered all the information, I thought, if I put this out there, I will be a drone strike. I mean, this is 2015, right? I actually wrote this book 2 years ago. And so when people read it, they're really amazed, because the opening scene starts out with the president of the United States being impeached over the Benghazi arms deals to actually a spinoff of Al-Qaeda from Syria. And so we are looking now. I didn't know ISIS even existed then. And as I dug into who runs Al-Qaeda, I know they're not really a serious terrorist group, because they're involved with the Israeli and the United States intelligence agencies. Yeah, so, yeah. You know, I think it was kind of a interesting thing how I wrote this book and then all of a sudden life starts imitating it. But I didn't know what to do with the information. I thought people really wouldn't be able to handle it. And so I thought, well, I'll write it in a novel, and that gives me some a little sense of plausible deniability, so to speak. And so, you know, I invite the reader, contact me through the website. A lot of the 9/11 stuff is real and it's truthful, and it is from FBI documents. And so when I discovered things like the women involved, these are on in FBI documents, two women. At least one, but I think two, are involved, and kind of traced back a little history onto who they were through my characters. All of that background for those women was the FBI. And the things that I found that were really interesting and really most shocking to me as an American is the FBI was covering that up, as well as the media. I studied this stuff for thousands of hours, and I was in final edit of the first edition. The second edition is going to be coming out here in the next week or so. There's also a foreword by a United Airlines retired 767 pilot, and some really great endorsements from people that are involved in the 9/11 truth movement. So that's basically the only change. Yeah, it's kind of exciting things that I found. And as I woke up from my cognitive dissonance and started researching, I realized that I was a typical American, or maybe a typical world citizen, that was getting my information from the media. And I didn't know about a gold heist, or I didn't know that Enron, Global Crossing, and WorldCom investigations were in Building 7 that fell down later in the afternoon after not being hit by an aircraft. And a lot of people don't even know that Building 7 fell down, or that Building 4 and Building 6 were destroyed as well.
That's right.
And so I tried to make the whole 9/11 story be presented to the person who maybe is starting to doubt and question. See, in the United States, we've got these news people now that have just been busted and caught lying and creating fake stories. And these are news presenters. They are
like Brian Williams, right?
Yeah. And Bill O'Reilly, the same on Fox. Yeah. And already Anderson Cooper, who apparently was once with the CIA. And it's interesting, too, as I've kind of been going through some of this stuff, as I've dug in and I found how many photographers and reporters are actually with the CIA and have been for a long time. I read an interesting book called On the Trail of the Octopus by Lester Coleman. It's actually banned in the United States. You can find it on the internet in a PDF. But he basically was a DEA agent and a DIA agent for the United States government in Cyprus. And that whole book is basically around something else I found connected to the 9/11 issue, Pan Am 103, and the heroin coming out of the Middle East. So that's a great book. I mean, I highly suggest if you want to read it. I read it in one night. So if you can, you know, have yourself some nice strong coffee and read it online on your computer, you can easily do it. And it's very informative. It's interesting. And then also, he actually started out himself in intelligence work as a photographer, journalist of some sort. So it's very, very prevalent. So when you see people getting their heads cut off, supposedly, in beheadings and that sort of thing from this new group called ISIS, for some reason, we find that ISIS just absolutely will not attack Israel. They're only attacking Christians and Muslims, but they're only less than a four-hour drive from Israel. So you got to wonder, and we've certainly left them with plenty of vehicles, and they have no problem getting the gas.
Well, did you see the recent one about U.S. aid stamps were even on the, they've been getting supplies, resources, weapons, ammunition, all kinds of stuff.
Oh, yes. It's horrific. I have to tell you, once I got into really the deep research on 9/11, and it just keeps on going, I'm embarrassed to be an American at this point.
Well,
My husband and I are considering leaving.
It's not your guys' fault. I mean, it's like blaming the regular English person for the colonial empire, what they did or whatever. It doesn't apply. It's a kind of a misdirected sense of guilt, I think. Sure, there is a responsibility of course, trying to deal with the situation and regain control of the government. That I admit to, but I don't think individual Americans should feel guilty for something that they both don't know and also has been covered up and lied about, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I don't feel as much personal guilt as I do embarrassment, I guess, on the world stage that our company, that was a Freudian slip. Our government is run by huge corporations and they make money off war. And one of the things that I talk about in the methodical illusion, well, I talk about the New World Order. And I think a lot of people don't really understand the magnitude of what happened on 9/11. And when people say to me, well, why would you write about that? Such an old subject. I mean, it was 14 years ago. Well, what happened with 9/11 was such an orchestrated and methodically created an illusion as what it was. And it was so methodically created. However, the creators of the event did not, unfortunately for them, use a flight attendant as a consultant. And had they done that, they wouldn't have got caught. How I caught them and how I discovered where the aircraft and passengers and crews were taken and how it was done and how it was covered up was by my nearly 30-year airline training and experience. And so there were things that they just didn't know. And like I said, I mean, after I discovered all this, first off, I was in shock and I couldn't even continue writing. And then I thought, well, how am I going to deliver this? And would anybody care? Well, my book has been starting now the second month at the number one position in historical fiction on Amazon in the United States. I haven't looked and see where it is in UK or however it's done around the other parts of the world, but I know it's selling. And I've done autographed copies to lots of countries, probably a dozen different countries. And it's amazing to me that people are so interested in this, and they should be, because this is not just the future of the United States. The New World Order is basically the one world government that even is referenced in the Bible. It's worldwide communism and total tyranny, and we're all going to be sucked in on this. So it's really time people wake up and understand. And that really was the mission for me to write the book the way I did, was to help people understand, first off, how hard it is to wake up. My main character, the protagonist, her name is Vera Hansen. And she is a widowed flight attendant, senior flight attendant. And she had that fear of being labeled a tin hat wearer and a truther. And she refused to look. After some time in the book, she discovers that her husband, who had been killed in an accident, was actually a pilot for 9/11 Truth and involved big in the research into the whole 9/11 event. So she makes some discoveries and she starts coming out and leaving that fear of being labeled behind. And I know in the United States, on our television, I don't know about Europe because I haven't been over there for years, but here, if you question 9/11, or if you have from day one, if you've just questioned how did Building 7 fall down, I will never forget when I started this research, listening to a news channel, CNN or Fox News, just had it on while I was cooking or something, listening to see what was going on. And someone was questioning the Building 7 falling down at 5:20 in the afternoon, having not been hit by an aircraft or any residue, really, debris from the towers. And they were called an anti-Semite. And I went, what? Like, wait a minute. Okay, yeah. Wait a minute. Now, okay, a building falling down. Now, how do you get anti-Semitism out of this? And I really had not looked very deep at that point. I was just starting to look at this. I just discovered the hijackers were still alive. And I thought, well, that's the strangest thing I can imagine anybody saying. But that name calling, that pinhead, tinfoil hat, truther, those kind of things, that's a Saul Alinsky response from Rules for Radical. And that name calling thing is what my main character, my protagonist, was afraid of. She didn't want to look into 9/11. And I think a lot of us are like that. I think, and that's my target audience. I want people to understand that this was huge. It was complicated. There was millions of dollars in put options, stock options, insurance fraud, stolen gold, gold heist, Brady bonds that were expiring the next day worth $240 billion with a B dollars, wow. U.S. dollars. Yeah. And I mean, there were so many things. So what I did was I created a character and I wrapped up every truther I'd ever read about or seen their videos or talked to or listened to on a radio channel. And I created a character named Max Hager. And Max Hager he's a Vietnam vet, so he's a little bit older, but he's a lot wiser. And he is the truther's truther, and he delivers to the reader all of the things that went on that day so that if you got your information from the mainstream media, Max is going to wake you up to all of those things that went on. And he's got a character. Every man that reads his book wants to play him in the movie. I mean, everybody falls in love with Max Hager. He truly is the truther's truther. And so the reader actually wakes up with the main character as the 9/11 truth stuff is presented to her while she's in the middle of doing other research.
Now, let me ask you, I think this is always an interesting question because I think the biggest issue we're faced with here is not when it comes to the material that's available or, you know, any of those issues. There's just so much out there, as you said, available to people. The problem we're faced with is that people, one, either refuse to look at it or just simply don't have the interest or that spark within them that causes them to ask some of these questions, which is very unfortunate. But having said that, do you think that it's easier for people? We can make the comparison of the Da Vinci Code, for example. I mean, some of the subjects that he brought up in that book, I can't tell you how many people around me started talking about those issues just because they've read it in that book as opposed to when I talked about some of those ideas previously. So is it more of a psychologically perspective that this is a much an easier way entry into these kinds of subjects, do you think, if it's fiction?
Yeah, this is really the hot new way to introduce the truth to people. It's funny that you mentioned Dan Brown because just either yesterday or the day before on Amazon, I guess your readers can go to Amazon.com and read the reviews. Somebody just on Amazon in a review compared me to Dan Brown, which was totally awesome because I years ago studied all of the stuff that Dan Brown did on the history of the Holy Blood, Holy Grail, and mm-hmm. all of that aspect and back into the Knights of King Solomon's Temple and into the Illuminati and Freemason. And yes, it all does connect to the 9/11 stuff. Yes. And also Sybil Edmonds has written her latest book is in a novel form. It is easier for people to see this. If you watched my book in a movie, you would probably walk out of that movie and just like reading the book, what I've discovered are people that are coming forward to me after reading The Methodical Illusion and saying, had I read this or heard an interview of you on the radio even 6 months ago, I wouldn't have believed it. But we have been lied to. This is a war machine this country's running. We have got to stop. And how can I help? How can we get involved? And people are waking up rapidly. And if this is a tool that helps, then, you know, so be it. I mean, this thing sat for 2 years in the corner of my room in about a 2-inch thick stack of manuscript. And I'd walk by it and think, oh, man, people will hate this. But that's not what happened. If people are reading it, they're waking up and they're thanking me for speaking out. And a lot of people wonder why other airline people haven't come forward. Well, they have come forward to me since the book has come out, and a lot of United and American pilots, retired and pilots that are still working, are actually buying the book direct from the publisher in quantity to hand them out. So most of them have come forward and read the book and said, you have figured this out. This is the missing piece of the puzzle. And there is no doubt exactly how I lay it out in the book, how it was done. And then I did find who did cover it up and how that cover up was done. and how those companies got involved in United States national security computer systems. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty frightening because they're still in there. They just changed the name of their company.
What are some of the big key elements that we need to discuss here, do you think?
Well, what happened for me was I started looking just even, let's just take Flight 11, the first plane out. And as I'm reading through these FBI transcripts, I see that one of the flight attendants coined a few phrases in the transcripts. It's typed up by the FBI. She referred to the hijacker as a he, and she said this, he stood upstairs. And there are no stairs in a 767. They're only in the 747s. And so I thought, well, that's a weird thing. Why would she say that? And then she said this. She said, we're the first. And yes, indeed, they were the first of four aircraft that day. And then she said also that he has sprayed pepper spray or mace in the business cabin and we can't breathe in business class. She's calling from her 3R jumpsuit, which is the very tail section of the double-aisled 767. It's a very large aircraft. And so she's about 155, 160 feet away from the action up there. I'm not sure how she knew what was going on. But let me just tell you this. My brain clicked right here. If you spray pepper spray or mace or some type of toxic tear gas type of gas like that in a pressurized cabin, everyone, including her, and she was on the phone for 27 minutes, and never coughed once, never mm-hmm. had her eyes. She never said to anybody, oh, this tear gas is so bad. It's even back here now. And it would be in a matter of about 3 minutes. And so if the aircraft was pressurized, and that's what took me, and I said to my husband, this girl just has been waiting for a flight attendant to hear what she just said. And my ears heard it. And I guess maybe if you weren't in the airline industry, and you hadn't had experience where someone sprayed cheap perfume even or broke a bottle of rum in business class, everybody on the aircraft is going to smell it in a matter of minutes. And if it's tear gas or pepper spray or mace or anything like that, it's going to be circulated through if the cabin is pressurized. And then when I saw that she said he stood upstairs, not only were they not pressurized, they were in a hangar, and every hangar has stairs. And they're usually in at least two, if not three, corners of the large hangar, depending upon which type of hangar it is and how large it is. And upstairs are always offices in a hangar. And so I realized right then and there that she put out a message that wasn't a threat to the handlers on board. There were not 19 Arab hijackers involved. I did find that 10 of them are still alive, and there are people that are much smarter than I am that are surmising that the other 9 were completely make-believe, just like I was going to do when I went to find a Middle Eastern character, and I was going to grab a first name from one and a last name from the other, which actually I did in the novel. So that is true. It's a true story. You can find out. I just grabbed a first name from one and a last name from another one, and that's exactly what the FBI did. And now, I also found that in the first 72 hours, the FBI originally claimed that there were 4 other people that were hijackers that were part of that 19 number they are sticking to. But unfortunately, 3 of those people showed up alive. They weren't hijackers. They hadn't been in Boston, Newark, or Washington, and they weren't involved in the hijackings. And they showed up in person at their local FBI or wherever. And one of them was an FAA aviation safety employee, even. And his brother, who the FBI claimed was on the passenger manifest in the first 72 hours after the event, the FBI claimed that these 4 people were there. 3 of them were alive, and one of them had been dead for a year. The FAA employee's brother had actually died in a small plane crash on September 11th, 2000. And so they actually quickly backpedaled, and a lot of people don't know that's written in a book by Paul Zaremba. And I found that really interesting as well. And that came out as I continued researching after The Methodical Illusion was written, because I can't stop now. I mean, I'm digging into some details now that are just phenomenal. And I have a terabyte of information from the Freedom of Information Act to go through and just my own research and people that I believe were quote unquote handlers and were actually involved that day. So the things that popped up for me were like the pressurized cabin, the stairs. And then also on flight 11, the two flight attendants were giving completely conflicting reports. One of them made a mistake that no flight attendant would ever make, ever. If your life depended upon this, you would never make this mistake. No flight attendant in the entire world would claim that an innocent passenger is the hijacker. And both of the flight attendants on flight 11 referred to only one man, singular male, as a he, as the hijacker, until later on, then Amy Sweeney cooked up with, she used a different number, 3 or 5 or something. But originally she called in and she said the hijacker was in 9B, seated in 9B in business class. Later on, she called back and said, oh, I made a mistake. The hijacker was in 10B. 9B had been killed or had been injured and then later on killed. Well, I looked into who 9B was because I thought, well, that's a weird thing because, listen, in the event of a hijacking, what would happen is we'll land the aircraft somewhere and some SWAT team, Navy SEALs or some FBI SWAT team, police SWAT team, somebody will liberate that aircraft. And if I told them that you were the hijacker and you really weren't, you probably wouldn't live to rebut my accusation. So it's not a mistake a flight attendant would make claiming that someone was a hijacker that wasn't. And so what I looked into about this passenger in 9B, I found very fascinating. He was actually a trained assassin for a foreign intelligence agency. He was also trained in anti-hijacking procedures and in hostage rescue. Those were his three specialties. He was involved in something that's called the Sayeret Matkal, which is a special forces unit of the Israeli Defense Forces, Mossad. And so we are led to believe that this man, I did a little research on him. It's really interesting because some of the stolen passports actually came from his hometown in the United States. He lived in Denver until he was 14, moved to Israel. When he was 18, he, of course, had to serve in the military, the Israeli Defense Forces, where they pulled him for the Special Operations Sayeret Matkal. I found the Sayeret Matkal very interesting because there's a couple other big players in the world stage that were also trained assassins. One of them just was at the United States Congress, Bibi Netanyahu. He's also a member of the Sayeret Matkal. And so was a gentleman who was, if you'll remember, on 9/11, he was in New York City the night before, and then he was in the BBC studios. He's the man who coined the phrase war on terror and was one of the very first individuals to tell the whole world that, in fact, this was done by Osama bin Laden from a cave in Afghanistan. And his name is Ehud Barak. He is also Sayeret Matkal, which means that these people are trained assassins. They are trained to kill people. And so we're led to believe, now I looked up a little bit about this 9B guy that we're supposed to believe was killed. He was fluent in English, Hebrew, and Arabic. So now we're led to believe that the people sitting behind him, the two hijackers who were planning the 9/11 event, this is the biggest event since Pearl Harbor. This actually was coined to the planners who planned it. They called it the new Pearl Harbor, and it really truly was. So here these two supposed hijackers are sitting in row 10A and B having a conversation right behind this guy's ears, not 2 feet behind his ears, is speaking in Arabic about their plan to take over the aircraft. He can hear them, and for no reason, they decide to jump up and stab him with a box cutter. If you can believe that, you're still under the veil. If you can start to wake up and see what nonsense that is, this character 9B, his friends in Israel, in the IDF, they said about him he could kill any human being with a pen and a credit card. And he was a businessman traveling, and he surely had a pen and a credit card on him. And if he was listening to these Arabs planning to hijack the aircraft, then you can tell me, figure out why he didn't do something about it and allowed himself to be killed. But originally, remember, he was pointed out as by an American flight attendant on flight 11 as the hijacker. And I believe, in fact, he was a handler, most likely.
And again, you were just listening to the first part of an interview with author Rebecca Roth on RedIceRadio.net out of Sweden. Rebecca's novel is called Methodical Illusion and came out in early 2015. She was being interviewed here by Henrik Palmgren. I also interviewed Rebecca Roth back in the winter, and that show is available on the website RadioForAll.net. And just a reminder, on September 9th, the Progressive Movie Night is back with the world premiere of the new film firefighters, architects, and engineers exposed the myths of 9/11. And we're very fortunate to have architect Richard Gage, founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, here at the event to introduce the film and answer your questions. So join us on Wednesday, September 9th at 7 p.m. in the Auerbach Auditorium in Hillier Hall on the campus of the University of Hartford. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.